Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness in today's show. We'll also be responding to your email questions and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here and we'll be right back. Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Excellent.
Excellent.
And yourself?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm good. I had a big moment today when I had a big assumption revealed to me.
Can you say more about that?
It was quite a shock, actually.
Tell us, please.
Well, it's an experience I had had multiple times where a certain outcome had always resulted.
Uh-huh.
There was assumption built into it, and I had always gotten that certain outcome.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I didn't get that outcome today.
What a jolt to the system, huh?
It was like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It was hard to believe.
Yeah, and it's hard to believe in the short term, right? Or in this event, this is really hard to take in. But the implications are kind of staggering, aren't they?
Yes.
Because that means anything that you approach in that same kind of, we could say, even perhaps unconscious or not fully conscious,
yes,
realm of assumption,
yes,
could not go your way at any time.
Yes. Huh. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it in those terms.
Oh, gosh. Well, that'll bring up another level of anxiety. Because what it shows us is what it enables us to begin to explore is all of the assumptions about what we have control over.
Yes.
And, of course, life for most folks is just a non-stop piece of evidence that no, you don't have control over that, and no, actually, you can't control that, and no, not that either. And of course, for most of us, because we're fortunate and blessed and privileged and all of those things, there can be big gaps in between these events.
Uh-huh.
So it can seem for a really long time that in fact we are controlling life.
Yes.
And then, as you experienced today, we have one of those shocking moments in which we get it that, wow, there are no guarantees.
Yes, yes.
So it's helpful, isn't it?
It was very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
It was very helpful.
Not perhaps totally pleasant.
Yes.
But very helpful.
Yes.
Very instructive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I haven't noticed a whole lot of self-hate afterwards.
A whole lot of what?
Self-hate.
Oh, well, that's good.
Do
you think that system is kind of in shock itself, or you know, hasn't quite caught up, gained speed?
I don't know. I will keep watching and report back.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over a little time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
Wow, so big spiritual opportunity day.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect for all of us when we're paying attention.
Yeah, when we're paying attention, kind of every moment of every day is a big spiritual opportunity.
Yes.
Time, isn't it?
Yes.
Uh-huh. It's endlessly interesting that as conditioned humans, we idealize being asleep.
Yes.
You know, we just, conditioning, egocentric karmic conditioning really prefers that, and it takes us a long time to notice that when we actually can see both choices, we do not choose unconsciousness.
Uh-huh.
That when we're actually here, what we choose is presence and participation.
Yes.
But if we snooze for a second, conditioned mind is going to come right in there with these deep, deep, deep beliefs that the way to be happy is to be comfortable, to have everything go along without a hitch, and just be able to snooze along to death.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Thank goodness for practice.
Yeah, because it's funny, isn't it? Like if you were going to say you're going to go on a trip to, you know, you've always been fascinated with the Far East, and you're going to go on a big 3-month tour of the Far East.
Yes.
And saying, boy, you know, I hope I can sleep through that. You know, you'd never say that out loud because people would think that you were insane, and you would know instinctively that would not be the thing to say.
Yes.
And yet when we're left alone with conditioned mind, that's exactly what conditioned mind would be angling for, and what it's angling for all the time, even under those circumstances. So, yes. You know, we get the ugly American title, you know, from, and it's not just us. I've seen a couple of other cultures who are right there with us when it comes to this. You know, where you travel around the world, and then you want everything to be exactly the way it is at home.
Yes.
And anybody who doesn't do it the way you're used to doing it is just flawed in some way.
Yes.
And so that's, to me, an example of going along with conditioned mind and its desire to stay asleep. So if I can't sleep through this culture, the very least I can do is point out everything that's wrong with it. Which is another way of staying asleep.
Yes. Wow. Sherry, I'd like to give out our phone number today.
All right.
Phone lines are wide open today. We'd love to hear from you.
We might as well let somebody else call, because otherwise I'll just philosophize through the next hour.
Yes. Toll free in North America, 888-514-2100. Phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you today. Sherry, you have a trip coming up in a week, 10 days or so?
Yes, I do, and I just had a moment this afternoon when I got a message through the monastery that the travel agent was reporting that perhaps I didn't know that that ticket was never booked. It was just the itinerary was just for me to take over and make sure it was what I wanted. And I called right back and said, does this mean I'm not going? They said, well, no, you could probably still go. However, let us get into the computer and make sure. And I thought, well, wouldn't that have been something if I had a less proactive travel agent? I would have arrived happily very late at night because I'm taking a red-eye to North Carolina.
Yeah.
And I would have stepped up to the counter only to find out that I have no reservation. It would have been one of those moments, perhaps, that you were describing earlier. Yeah. So,
exactly.
I'm going to go to Raleigh-Durham to the Unity Church of the Triangle.
Yes.
Where I'll do a Saturday workshop and then Sunday services, which is always an opportunity for me. You know, following a schedule, people don't go into Zen because they're attracted to following schedules.
Uh-huh.
So that's always or delivering sermons, you know.
You just
don't go into Zen because, you know, you're good at giving speeches. Well, at least I'm not. I'll go from there to Athens, Georgia the next night, Monday night, and then Thursday night in Asheville. So I'm going to some of my very favorite places in the world on this little trip.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I'm lucky.
In the South, it's probably warm or warmer than...
Not necessarily, no. It can just... we've been to... done retreats in Nantahala Gorge at around this time of year in ice storms. And
wow.
We think of the sunny South, but I think it's a little farther south, and even there, it's not always the case.
Yes.
But we can, you know, we can hope.
Great. And all of those details, Sherry, are on your website, which
is correct.
SherryHuber.com.
Yes.
And there's lots of, following that even, there are lots of great retreats and more workshops.
Yeah.
Both nationally and internationally.
That's true.
Huh?
That's true. I just put out to the email class a little reminder that the signing up at advanced discount for our Italy retreat is going to end February 1st. And I said, and it's true, I am so excited about that retreat because it happens during that, what is for me, unpronounceable festival time in Assisi where they turn back the clocks and it's the 1200s and people are in costumes and it's torchlight and dances, singing, and oh, I just think it's going to be the most fun.
So, sounds fabulous.
Yeah, you want to come?
Yes.
Sure. Okay, good.
Huh? Let's go. Great. Let me give out that phone number again. Probably people didn't have a pencil handy. Toll-free in North America, 888-514-2100. The phone lines are open. If you have that burning question you've been meaning to ask Sherry, now is the chance. Sherry, I have a number of email questions here.
All right.
Hi, Michael and Sherry. I am writing about a caller you had on this week about duality. As a side note, this is several weeks past.
I was going to say, gosh, that doesn't ring a bell.
Yes.
Okay.
And I realized that my conditioning is trying to create problems in being indecisive. I am just finishing my teacher training and wanted to work in Africa or somewhere like that. Now it's telling me that I can't do this, and then when I decide to do beauty teaching, then it tells me I can't teach or that you're not organized enough to teach or you're not good enough. I know that my conditioning tries to break up my ideas or make them bad. It doesn't help when I start talking about this out loud so then people confirm my conditioned reality.
Oh, dear.
Conditioning is instigating everything. I spend a lot of time on my own because my conditioning has said that I have always had a partner and need to find myself. And now that that has happened, it's telling me I am sad. I am starting
sad
to see...
or sad?
Sad.
S-A-D.
S-A-D.
Okay.
I'm starting to see that it's trying to absorb as much attention as it can, and being on my own is one heck of a way of getting this. Also, when beginning this practice a year ago, conditioning tried to stop watching TV only to discover that that's not what it wanted. So then it watched more. This is the thing that keeps my attention, and I try to go back to the breaths, then it's blah, blah about that. I feel a little like my head is going to explode with the amount of stressing, shouting, and talking that goes on. It tries to block every path I go to walk along. Oh, you don't want to do this. You wanted to do that. It is starting to frustrate a part of me really badly. How can I handle the frustration, and what are your thoughts? From a listener in England.
Well, as you can imagine, I have a number of thoughts. First of all, you know, a good part of that sounds like pure old garden variety self-hatred.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just there to cause suffering. And so with everybody, the first thing I always encourage people to do is come to the monastery for a there's nothing wrong with you retreat, because that's the best way to get some great tools for dealing with that.
Yeah.
Now, I had this image as you were reading along of somebody with a small child, or maybe a better image would be an old person. And if this is somebody who just talks on. You know, just talks on about whatever passes, kind of like me, whatever passes through their head, you know, just verbalizes it. And so the person who is accompanying this small child or this old person, however you want to visualize it, simply says with regularity, oh, okay, we'll see. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. Okay, can you picture that?
Yes.
And this would be an excellent approach to this head that is going to explode with all of this stuff. You know, there's just no sense in entertaining that kind of conversation at all. And I know that when people are caught in that, to have somebody to say something like that just sounds nuts. Like, it's the only thing happening in my world. How can I not attend to it? But you have to. You have to learn how not to give it your attention.
Yeah.
So the images that I always use, you know, teenagers. Now, teenagers, you see, they kind of have this down. They can be sitting somewhere listening to the radio, and there's a television on, and their parent is yelling at them, and they don't hear any of it. They're just focused on whatever it is that they're doing. Okay, they're playing some video game. In a way, that's where we're headed. Okay? To be able to turn the attention away from that yammer, 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 yammer so completely that if somebody said, can't you hear that? Your initial response would be, hear what?
Yes.
Okay? Because now I am not actually idealized. I'm kind of kidding about the teenager. You know, I'm not talking about going unconscious. I'm talking about learning to turn the attention away from that conversation and back to whatever one is preferring to attend to in the moment. So for me,
yes,
it's the breath, it's my body, it's where I am, and what's around me.
Yes.
So I come back here. Now I'm here. What's my breath like? How does my body feel? What are my senses registering? Okay, where am I? Hello, where am I?
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm here. I don't go off into that imaginary world or that conversation. I don't care if there's a voice that wants me to watch TV. I'm not going to watch TV, so there's no sense in having that conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
It sounds like what you're describing is a real grounding in the present moment.
Yes. And it's a practice. You know, people kind of tune in to, oh, good grief, my head is full of all this stuff. You know, there are all of these people talking up here, and at least half of them are really mean and nasty. What do I do? Okay, it didn't happen yesterday. It's probably not going to be over tomorrow.
Yes.
It's a practice. We have practiced not paying attention for a lifetime. It might take a little while to learn to be able to direct the attention. But if a person wants to do it, if it's what they want more than anything, then they'll do it very, very quickly. If they're sort of like, oh, well, I'd like to, but, you know, actually, it's really hard, and I'm sort of distracted, and I'm afraid, and confused, and then, you know, it's might not happen in this lifetime.
Yes. Yes. Wow, that's fascinating. Thank you for that, Sherry.
It's big. It is the whole deal. It's the whole deal. There is this imaginary world that's being created by egocentric karmic conditioning. And people believe that that imaginary little ego world is the whole universe. Stepping out of that, stepping into the larger world and recognizing that little ego world for what it is the whole thing. In that little ego world, there is suffering, and it's never going to be any different. So I'm constantly using that image of a darkened room and a room with the windows open and all the lights on. You go into that darkened room, and it's always going to be dark. You're not going to go into that dark room and be able to open the windows and turn on the lights. It's not going to happen. So what we do is recognize that that dark room is there, and then we just next door to the room where all the windows are open and the lights are on. And when we're there, then life works. Everything is easy. We're happy. We're enjoying ourselves. We're filled with gratitude. And so that's what the person is asking about. That description of that world is being in that darkened room.
Yes.
And the only answer to it is, leave there.
Huh?
Go to where the lights are on. And where the lights are on is here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sherry, what you're pointing at is something that I love about this practice, which is it's so consistent.
Yes.
It's simple. It's not easy.
Right.
It's consistent.
Yes.
And it can be done.
That's right. It's very straightforward. I tell people constantly, it's like science. It's much more like science than anybody's idea of religion. If you do this, this will be the result. If you do that, that will be the result. You know, we could have said to you about what you experienced today, if you go along unconsciously assuming that life is always going to deliver you a certain result, you are bound at some point to get a shock and to suffer.
Yeah.
It happened.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, it's just how it is. It's not that you're a bad person. It's not that you were wrong. You weren't foolish. It's just, this is what you were doing. This is what happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I didn't confirm the reservation. I wasn't going to get on the plane.
Yes.
Now, all of the voices that might want to say, how stupid, I can't believe you, what were you thinking, what's the, you know, why engage in that conversation? It's simple. You don't call the travel agent back to confirm the reservation. You'll get one. You don't go on the trip. You know, it's not personal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're going to take a break now, and we'll be back in just a minute. Coming up next in our second segment of Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions as well. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, I said it before, and I'm going to say it again. The phone lines are wide open here.
Where is everybody tonight?
It's a good question.
They're perhaps out having more fun than we're having.
Perhaps they're continuing the Martin Luther King celebration from yesterday.
Perhaps so.
Who knows?
That would be a good thing to do. I was driving into town yesterday, and they were playing an excerpt on the radio of the speech that he gave the day before he was killed.
Yes.
And what a powerful thing.
Yes.
It's just astounding, and his courage, his commitment, his clarity is just so inspiring.
Yes.
And such a loss.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It, to me, it was like just a real consistent focus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
This is where we are. This is where we're going. This is what we need to do. And this is how we need to do it.
Yes.
This is how we need to do it. We need to do it with integrity and commitment and honesty and responsibility and I'm very grateful that once a year at least as a nation we're reminded, and especially when it seems to me there are so many occasions that we have that are, at least for me, not nearly as inspiring.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Wonderful. I was in the city yesterday attending some of the celebrations up there for his day, mm-hmm. and it's a great reminder.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of great and fun things.
Tell me.
Oh, you were going to do another email, weren't you?
Well, I was going to give out the phone number.
Okay, give out the phone number, and I'll tell you something that
okay.
you probably already knew, but I just learned.
Toll free.
That's always a fun
in
thing.
In North America, in the U.S. and Canada, 888-514-2100. Please give us a call. We'd love to have you on the line. All right, Jerry, you go.
All right. Well, I was reading this little article by a fellow named E.O. Wilson, and he was a professor of comparative zoology at Harvard University. And the word that he used was biophilia.
Biophilia.
Biophilia. I had never heard or seen it before. Now, you can probably guess what it means.
I actually cannot.
Love of life.
Oh.
Biophilia.
B-I-O.
B-I-O-P-H-I-L-I-A.
Yes.
So does that make us biophiliacs?
Sure.
I guess so, huh?
Yes. Yes.
I just thought that was just such a... Anyway, it's a whole article on humans and the environment and how we approach the environment and the importance and do we care for the environment simply because of human beings, or can we go beyond our human beingness and see ourselves as a part of something larger and actually care about the environment in that larger sort of way, even if we're a part of it, even if it's not something that affects us so directly. You know, you can lose your appendix, you can lose your tonsils, you know, you can apparently, supposedly lose a lot of things without actually being affected. Now, I personally don't believe that.
Huh?
That's the, you know, that's what we're told. So do we just kind of get rid of everything that we can and just hold on to the essentials, or do we see that this is part of a larger whole and we want to bring loving kindness and respect and compassion to all of it simply because it all exists and we are a part of that?
Yes.
So
yes.
I, for one, am passionate about those kinds of conversations, and in the pursuit of that, learned that I am a biophiliac.
Great. Biophiliacs are us.
That's right.
Sherry, I have another email question here.
All right.
Hello, Sherry. I find in my practice that there is a constant tension, clearer during Zazen practice. It appears as an annoying sensation, not a headache, in my forehead as if it has always been there and it never goes away. I was never really aware of it until I began practicing three years ago and only clearly in the last 6 months. I stay with it and pay very close attention. There is a good deal of resistance to this. Recently, it has been dominating not only my Zazen, but daily mindful practice, which is developing well now. The only other place I feel constant tension is in my stomach. As soon as I notice it, it collapses, if you know what I mean. But this rarely happens in my forehead. My question is this where my egocentric conditioned mind lives? Should I do anything other than paying attention to it? Regards from a listener. And P.S. would like to express my gratitude for the truly valuable radio show you do.
Oh, that's very kind. That's an interesting one, you know. In the chakra system, that's person's describing the sixth chakra, and that tends to be sort of the center of knowing, beliefs. You know what you believe, but not in that transcendent sort of. Not on the wisdom end of the continuum, but more, the conditioned. I always tell people it's It's like when you walk into a room, the sixth chakra has an opinion about it.
Yeah.
You know, is this nice? Is this, do I like this? What about those colors? Sort of thing happens there. So, and along those lines, very often that sixth chakra uses the third chakra, which people, you know, people call the stomach a lot of things. So are we talking about up high around the solar plexus, or are we talking about down lower, you know, below the navel, kind of down in the gut?
Yeah.
And very often, so those two centers, the will center at the solar plexus, and then down low, that kind of navel, below the navel, around that area is the second chakra, which is the emotional center. So very often the sixth chakra will use that third chakra, that will center, to clamp down emotion. And
yeah.
That's a very common pattern, at least with people who live in this country. Can't say about the rest of the world, but in this country, there's a lot of that going on, because when we're growing up, what we're taught is that we have to control our emotions. And so how are you going to control your emotions? Well, you clamp them down. And
yes.
So you use the power of the sixth chakra and the power of the third chakra to clamp down on the second chakra and hold those emotions in control. So very often that sixth chakra is kind of working overtime. And very often, of course, the person will experience sort of physical difficulties in all three of those areas. So the, you know, the upset stomach, kind of the anxious, burning, heartburn, that sort of thing, and then intestinal difficulties with maybe gas or bloating or constipation or diarrhea or that sort of thing. And so we can sense the interplay of those chakras. So my encouragement would be, as always, to experiment. And it sounds like the writer has been successful in sort of dissolving the, I'm guessing it's the third chakra that's being pointed at in the stomach area, and by simply focusing the attention there, noticing that it collapses, I think was the term that was used. It dissolves. With the sixth chakra, it can sometimes be interesting. Now, I don't encourage this during zazen, during formal sitting. During formal sitting, we sit. That's all. We sit. But during the rest of the time, as the person indicated, the mindfulness practice, so just going around in the world, doing whatever, and attending to what's going on, it can be interesting to feel as the on the exhalation, to feel the breath actually leaving the body through the crown of the head. Did I say that correctly?
Say it again.
Feel the breath exhaling, leaving the body through the crown of the head. It doesn't make sense, you know, because, of course, it wouldn't work that way. But if you imagine, as you exhale, the air goes up through the crown of your head. And what happens with that is that it actually moves the energy up through the crown of the head. And just play with that, walking around, and seeing if that begins to kind of break up the blockage that's there in the sixth chakra. Now, in the sixth chakra also, when with that kind of clamping down, people will often experience sinus difficulties.
Sinus.
And, you know, in Zen, we approach this as body and mind are one. So there's the mental, emotional, spiritual component, the kind of what you can't see or feel.
Yeah.
In that tangible, physical way. And then there's the physical component. And so it's not, I don't look at it that we have certain issues because we're kind of doing something wrong mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. It's just that it shows up on the physical plane, and it shows up on the mental, emotional, spiritual plane. So,
yeah.
And they're the same thing, just that one is visible and one is not visible.
Yes.
Is that making sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So often there will be the sinus the sinus difficulties that happen, headaches and that sort of thing in that part of the head. So we notice that as well. And it's not, I don't think it's cheating to work at these things from two angles. So
yeah.
We can be releasing the blockage sort of spiritually. One of the exercises that I offer a lot and really like is to imagine breathing a spiral of white light down into the head, and then on the exhalation, the spiral goes out through the front of the forehead. You inhale it back in, exhale it out the back of the head, inhale it back in, exhale it out the left side, inhale it back in, exhale it out the right side, inhale it back in, exhale it down through the body and into the earth. And it can just bring a kind of a breaking up energy to that stagnation or blockage or however we want to think about that.
Yeah.
And just to play with it, just practice it with it. The color for the sixth chakra is purple, so you could imagine a purple flower blooming. It's a closed bud, and then it opens up and blooms right there in that place in the forehead.
Yes.
Yeah, and then let us know what happens.
Wonderful. I was just following along as you were guiding us through that. So that was
very relaxing, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Coming up next on Open Air, in our third and final segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll also be responding to your email questions and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, I normally have a large pile of email questions.
And
it's getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Isn't that good?
That is good.
Yeah, we're getting caught up.
Yeah, we are getting caught up. I'm going to give out that phone number one more time here. Toll free in North America, 888-514-2100. The phone lines are open. Sherry, I have one more email question here. The subject is fear of death. Hello. I am having trouble with my emotional state following a recent health scare. I am so appreciative for the peace that Buddhism has already brought to my life. I know that my fear of death is an attachment to my own memory, personality, perception, and experience of consciousness. But I really have trouble with the idea of no longer perceiving my life, family, and friends the way I do now. Although I understand the idea of impermanence, I have trouble finding peace with it. How do you comfort those who fear death? Thank you, from a listener.
Well, the first thing that occurs to me about that is exactly what the word the writer used, and that's comfort.
Yeah.
So there is somebody who fears death. You know, with each one of us, there are lots of different aspects to our personality. And not all aspects fear death. So somebody does.
Yeah.
And it's possible to have a relationship with that part of ourselves that is comforting. And the one who comforts, we would talk about as center or the mentor or conscious compassionate awareness or whatever. And so a huge part of awareness practice is learning, and of course meditation is the vehicle that we use, learning to come here into the moment. So completely that there is nothing left over to be afraid.
Yes.
And from that place of conscious compassion and awareness, in that place, we can bring in anything that feels outside and therefore afraid.
Yes.
So that's one piece of it, and I guess it was the first question was when we were talking about the light in the dark room. This is really the same question.
Yes.
And so it's the same answer that I mean, it doesn't sound like it, but it is. Just so people don't think we're talking about something brand new and different, we're still talking about coming to this center, this place of conscious compassionate awareness, of well-being, of peace, of joy, of you know, all of those kinds of things that we describe, for the experience of being truly here with nothing anywhere else, nothing left outside of here, no
yes.
illusion of being separate from life.
Yes.
Because it's that illusion of separation from life that causes the fear. You know,
yes.
That's what sees me as a constant entity that must be maintained, that the loss of would be sad and that sort of thing. So that's one piece of it. The other piece of it would be, how are these messages of fear and dread and loss and deprivation being communicated? So I would suspect at this point, now, you know, we're talking about who is it who's afraid, and that we can have a comforting relationship with that aspect of the personality or that illusion of a separate self who feels afraid. But what is causing that fear? And what we usually see, of course, is, and the person pretty much described it, there's a conversation about, oh, well, that means this and that, and then I won't be with my family, and what will happen. And so there are stories being created
yeah.
that are causing that experience of fear or loss.
Yeah.
And it's important to see where these stories come from and how they're generated and how they're maintained. Because that's a real cause of suffering that we don't need to entertain.
Yes.
We don't need to support that kind of conversation for suffering.
Yes.
So that's you know, that's another piece of it. Yeah, and I would say for right now, those are probably the two most essential parts. Coming back to center, where there is no one to die,
yes.
and also looking at how much that conversation is about self-hatred, egocentric karmic conditioning, actually a desire, an attempt to pull one out of here and into a future where there's a problem, into a story where there's a problem. And in that way, it's really a conversation about death that results in suffering is no different from a conversation about how my loved ones are going to leave me, something's going to happen to them, I'm going to lose all of my money, I'm going to get sick,
yeah.
I'm going to get run over by a train. You know, anything that takes me out of this moment, away from here, into a story about something wrong or not enough, again, that's just standard conditioning, self-hatred. Death is just simply a piece of content that's being effective.
Yes, yes. And it sounds to me what you're pointing at is really the whole aspect of that communication, from the point where it's generated to the person who's receiving it.
Yes, yeah. And so, again, to realize that death is just this particular content.
Yes.
So if a person doesn't have anything going about death, then that karmic conditioning is going to be looking around for, okay, well, what are you worried about? All right, so you're not going to die. You're going to get really sick, and you're going to linger in hideous pain for a long time. Okay, there. Now let's have that conversation over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah, or whatever it is, again, that takes one away from here and into the future where there's something wrong or not enough.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Thank you for that, Sherry.
Yeah.
And to me, it reminds me of some of the email question from England about that continuous conversation that's generating all that suffering.
Yes, and it always is. If if people took nothing else from this practice, it's kind of like my purpose for being on this earth, if there were such a thing, I think is simply to have that conversation, simply to talk endlessly about the conversation that goes on in people's heads, recognizing it, listening to it enough to hear what it is, seeing it for what it is, and realizing it's causing suffering and it's not necessary.
Yeah.
So recently, I don't know why we got on this kick, but somebody brought up the quote about most of life's problems exist because people can't sit alone in a room.
Yes.
And that's it. There it is. If we could sit still, peacefully, all of our problems would go away.
Yes.
Now, of course, the way conditioning looks at it is, no, you've got to get rid of all your problems before you can sit peacefully.
Right.
But that's not true. You have to learn to sit peacefully. And in that learning to sit peacefully, all the problems simply dissolve. So endlessly, I'm saying, in my little broken record fashion, the solution to every problem is come to center. Get
to center.
Here. Get out of the conversation, come back to the breath, and be here. Here there are no problems.
Yeah.
Now, somebody out there listening would say, but of course there are problems. I still don't have any money.
Right.
Well, then you're not here. You're still in a conversation about how you don't have money, and that's going to be a problem for you out there.
Yes.
But when you really get here, that conversation doesn't exist.
Yes. Yes.
And that's where we're going. So people will say, well, isn't that just quietism, or isn't that just escapist? I mean, how do you solve the problems of life? Well, the problems of life that need to be solved are problems that arise in the moment here. Now, very few people actually have any of those.
Yes.
Most people spend their lives in endless conversation solving problems that actually don't exist.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Sherry, we've come to the end of our hour.
Yeah, I better read up some more on my life as a biophiliac in case nobody calls us next week.
You have to come up with a new word for next week.
A new word for next week, my assignment. I accept. I'll have a new word I'm in love with for next week.
Great. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
Mine too.
Talk to you soon.
Good night.
Bye.